Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2020. This is episode 251. First episode of 2020. Thank you so much to everybody who has been tuning in for about 5 years now, 250 episodes. I did the math, and y'all, you know, like, I know we've kind of gone to the 1 hour format here in the last year or so just because of the guests that we've been having. That's the amount of time they have. But back in the day, man, we had like 3-4 hour long episodes. We had epic conversations that lasted hours on end. And I did the math, and you can now listen to the Dudes and Beer podcast over 10 days straight. More than 10 days of programming for Dudes and Beer, folks. If you go to dudesandbeer.com, all kinds of stuff there. Everything from our original conversations, which were just people sitting around the table having these conversations, to where we've evolved to now, which is having these conversations with professionals in the field, having these conversations with people that do this for a living, people like Dr. John Hall, people like John Bowne, investigative reporter, people like Mike Turber with 5x5 News coming on, people like our guest this evening, Susan Price, Gold Star mother, American Army veteran. She is also an investigative journalist herself with America Out Loud. And she's also the mother of Marine Gunnery Sergeant Aaron M. Kenefick. And that name may ring a bell to some of you in this. I guess the only way to put it nowadays is community of concern. Those of us who follow these stories closely, the things that our government does abroad. He was part of the very unfortunate ambush in the Ganjgul Valley in Afghanistan in September of 2009. And we're foregoing John Bowne's normal report this week. He has had the time off with his family for the new year. But even so, we have tons of audio clips today regarding this stuff. And the first one I would like to play is actually the reading of names. It's always so somber, but so poignant whenever this happens after situations like this, after the loss of life in military, to hear the names of those who fell in defense of our country and in defense of our liberties.
Killed in action, 8 September 2009, Ganjgul Valley, Afghanistan. Gunner Sergeant Edwin W. Johnson, United States Marine Corps, killed in action. 8 September 2009, Ganjgul Valley, Afghanistan. Gunner Sergeant Aaron M. Kenefick, United States Marine Corps, killed in action. 8 September 2009, Ganjgul Valley, Afghanistan. Hospital Corps, 3rd Class, James R. Layton, United States Navy, killed in action. 8 September 2009.
And that audio was posted by Soldier Dakota Meyer, who was actively in that ambush with Gunnery Sergeant Kenefick. Pardon me, folks. Like I said, I get a little choked up whenever I hear that stuff. What we're going to hear right now is actually a clip from Swenson, who was there. He was awarded the Medal of Honor through the efforts of people like Susan Rice, who started the effort to say, hey, everybody, these people died. They went through this horrible situation. They deserve the Medal of Honor for what they've done, and they deserve recognition for what they've gone through. And here is the clip from him on 60 Minutes recounting his experience in the Ganjgul Valley.
What kind of person would risk his life to save another? This kind. Former Army Captain William Swenson received the Medal of Honor today for extraordinary courage in a firefight with the Taliban in Afghanistan. David Martin has the story and the pictures.
This is Captain Will Swenson in the opening hours of the battle for which he would receive the Medal of Honor.
We had an enemy that was within hand grenade range.
30 yards?
Approximately.
And you're taking direct fire?
We are taking direct fire.
Sergeant Kenneth Westbrook was badly wounded, and a medevac helicopter had come to pick him up.
He had broken bones, a bullet had gone into his chest, he was bleeding profusely.
Swenson and one of the crew helped Westbrook to the helicopter.
And he gets to walk off that battlefield on his own strength, with our support, but he gets to walk off that battlefield.
Why is that so important?
Here is an opportunity for the Westbrook family to see their soldier walking off that battlefield, regardless of the severity of his wounds.
This video, taken by helmet cams worn by the medevac crew, was a revelation to Swenson.
I did not know of the existence of that video, and I had not remembered that moment. I couldn't look back and see that moment in my head, in my memory, and so it was lost.
But now it's found, including the moment when Swenson gave the man he'd been fighting side by side with for almost a year a kiss.
You know, we had a moment, we looked at each other. He almost had a smile on his face.
Did you ever see him again?
I never saw him again. 1 month later, he passed away at Walter Reed.
Swenson turned back to the battle and to the search for four missing Marines. By the time he and Marine Corporal Dakota Meyer, who already has received the Medal of Honor, got to them, they were all dead.
Dakota, myself, and a contingent of Afghans moved in the trench, and we began the horrible task of bringing those Marines off the battlefield.
When it was over and all the wounded evacuated, Swenson delivered a scathing sworn statement about the lack of artillery and air support that day, despite his repeated calls for help. When I'm being second-guessed by somebody that's sitting in an air-conditioned operations center, why the hell am I even out there in the first place?
Were you bitter?
I definitely had some choice commentary. Was I bitter? I was angry.
He quit the Army, thinking his angry words had ruined his career.
Those choice comments sometimes chase you down.
But Swenson missed being a soldier. So now the first Army officer since Vietnam to receive the Medal of Honor is asked to come back on active duty. David Martin, CBS News.
And that's what people decide to do, folks, is regardless to give themselves for the sake of our country, to give their families for the sake of our country. Joining us this evening, Army veteran Susan Price, Gold Star mother, investigative journalist with America Out Loud, and mother of slain soldier Aaron M. Kenefick. How are you today, Susan?
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk about this most stirring event in the very, very recent history of our country. I mean, most of us know it's come out now here actually in the last few weeks that everything that we went to Afghanistan for was predicated on a lie.
Exactly.
We should have never been in Afghanistan. We should have been nowhere near Afghanistan. Maybe we should have been using Afghanistan as like a through road, but we definitely shouldn't have been stopping there and doing what we were doing. And beginning with, you know, I mean, I remember whenever the war in Afghanistan first started, there were CNN clips of Geraldo Rivera out with soldiers, like American soldiers that were guarding Afghan poppy fields, stuff like that. And that right. began the like, what the heck is going on over there? And it's been pervasive since, pervasive, everything that has gone on in Afghanistan, especially this raid in the Ganjgo Valley, the ambush that happened. Let's start getting into a little bit of your son's history. Well, let's start with, what is a Gold Star family? We hear this term used all the time, Gold Star parents going and speaking at events, stuff like that. What is a Gold Star family, Susan?
Well, a Gold Star mother, father, sister, brother, we're a set of the community. We're the less than 1% of Americans that have a family member that served in all forces of the United States. We're in uniform. And we are the club that nobody ever wants to join. We're the club that were confronted by two Marines at the door when our sons have died in combat. So a gold star parent, and that's, you know, and it's really, it's just incredible the amount of people, especially even in the military, that don't know what a gold star mother or father is, you know, all these years of war. And then they, you know, when people, I introduce myself and I say, pleased to meet you, I'm Gold Star Mother Susan Price. And people will get this glazed over look and smile. Oh, well, congratulations. No, it's not congratulations.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's people, wake up. We're the less than 1% of America carrying the load, paying the freedom and sovereignty forward for the 99%ers that will never know the cost of war. The empty chair at the holiday table, the empty birthdays, the no more phone calls or hello, mom or dad. You know, that's what a gold star mother and father is.
Yeah, and it's such a personal sacrifice, such a family sacrifice to have that. And thank you for everything that your family has done for our country.
Thank
as well
you, Chris.
As well as your personal service in the Army.
Well, you know, I come from a long line of family of service. Even my great-grandmother was a Gold Star mother, and her son served in the Navy, the youngest of seven, and he was killed in the SS Leopold on Christmas Eve during World War II. So it's in our genetics. It's in the way we bring up our families. We serve our country. Even when we get out, we serve some way, somehow.
And I couldn't have said that better, having known a few Gold Star family people, knowing the fact that their service is never done. And now your service is the service of truth. Because of your son's death and the ambush that happened that day, you have become an investigator. You have actively taken on the charge of bringing the truth to light with the situations of 8 September 2009 there in the Gangil Valley of Afghanistan. Why don't you go ahead and give us a little background on Aaron, what his position was in the Marines, what he did for a living with the Marines, things like that, just so we can kind of lay the groundwork before we get to Afghanistan and the situations of that day.
Well, you know, my son was always the golden boy. He was a star athlete, football, baseball, basketball, track, whatever he did. He always had an entourage of 20 kids at my house, eating me out of house and home. But I didn't care. He was a good kid, and he grew up to be a wonderful, loving, kind, humanitarian man. And so he went into the delayed entry program right after his junior year of high school. And I said, Aaron, you know, I asked him years earlier, start thinking about college and what you want to do. And then the one day in his junior year, he says, Mom, I want to be a Marine like my grandfather, like my father. And I said, but Aaron, you're a gifted athlete. You could go to college on a scholarship. No, I've always wanted to serve my country, Mom. And this is
wow.
So I said, okay, well, I'll sit down with you when you go over your MOSs. And so, you know, all the recruiters came over to my house, and, you know, they've never had a mother sit down at the table with them. And I said, well, now you have, because I want to make sure that my son is serving in the right department where he needs to be doing what his gift is. So, you know, he went into admin, which I thought was, he wanted to be a pilot, but he was a tiny bit colorblind with the browns and the greens, so he couldn't do that. Hmm. He was very intelligent. He scored very high. And so admin, and with that, they used the admin for his TSSCI high security clearance, which took a little over 2 years to acquire. And then with that, he was always at the top of his class. They sent him to jump school in Georgia, where, and let me backtrack a minute, while he was waiting on his security clearance, he was living and working at Quantico. And, you know, big things happen in Quantico, Virginia.
Yeah.
So he was the driver for the commandant of the Marine Corps at that time. So he was already being prepped for big things because of his tests and how he was, his appearance, and just he was the whole package, not just as a mother of a Marine, but he truly was. And I've heard it from everybody. But so anyhow, he gets his security clearance, and this is the early it was like the year 2000. And so he took honor grad at Army Jump School. He was the honor grad. So with that, after he had all his credentials, they sent him over to Stuttgart, Germany, where he lived and did embassy work and was part of the Special Operations Reconnaissance Team. And for people that don't know, when you are stationed in Stuttgart, Germany, there's certain regions of the world where if there's problems, you're dispatched first. His was Africa and the entire Ivory Coast. So he actually was in on the mission, and I could tell you now, but Operation Shining Express, which was, they had some problems there with the Civil War with the Liberians. And we almost lost him then. He had two bullets flying over his head when they were on the rescue mission at that time.
Oh, wow.
So then shortly after that, before he left Germany, he calls me one day and he says, Mama, I'm going to be stationed in Tampa, Florida, U.S. CENTCOM. And I said, wow, Aaron. That's a big deal because there's not a lot of Marines. It's an Air Force base. But, you know, they had other different branches there. And they said, well, he says to me, I'm going to be the enlisted aide for a general in strategic plans and policies. And I hear this general is not well liked, but, you know, so nevertheless, that's my job. So I'll be moving there in July of 2004 till 2007. So he worked at CENTCOM with all the generals, the top generals that ran the Iraq and Afghanistan war. In fact, many times he'd have to fly back to Africa and to Iraq, where he had, you know, business to take care of, and then fly back to CENTCOM. So he spent about a year and a half working for the general that was in charge of strategic plans and policies. Then he transferred over to J2 intelligence and worked with the director of intelligence there. And like I said, he'd fly back and forth to Qatar and then back home. So then after his duty station was finished in the States here in 2007, August 1st, he flew to 3rd Marine Assault Battalion in Okinawa, Japan, and he was to live there for 3 years, and he didn't make it that long. He was there 2 years, then deployed to Afghanistan. Now, the team that went there before him, Embedded Training Team 2-7, they went over there in 9 months. did their duty, never had a problem. When Aaron went over there around the time Bo Bergdahl deflected from the Army,
yep,
and my son went over as embedded training team of Marines 2-8, that's when all hell broke loose. And my son was only there 2 months. He got there in July 22nd of 2009. And shortly after, a week or two later, they changed the rules of engagement. Then, all kinds of crazy stuff went on. My son was always, being targeted. And I actually have some documents that a few of the men on his team, and as well as he, were in a firefight. And two of the men, I was reading in there, and I'm like, oh, my God, my son was targeted. But what happened was a series of things happened to me as well, aside from this, that tie in, that are really scary. And you'll hear President Trump talk about the deep state and other people, but I'm here to tell you people, the deep state is real, because for 8 to 10 years, I was victimized until President Trump took office by all the different branches tied into the deep state. And lucky to be alive and lucky to tell my story, but it's a very important story because my son is the backstory to what happened. And in order to tell the crime, you have to go backwards and say, who was this person? Who did they know? What did they do? And Dakota Meyer's story is the front story of the Ganjgal ambush, but my son's story is the backstory.
Well, and that's what I want to get into, Susan, is, of course, your story as well. What has happened to you in the last many years since this happened, just prior to it happening, like you're saying, being targeted. We talk about this all the time on the show, folks. We have a targeted individual right here in our presence on the show.
Well, I'll tell you, as I tell you now, I have chills up and down my legs because it's really, and I talked to other family members that are high profile, as well as myself with their son's cases, and certain similar things have happened to them too. And it's really bizarre, even to us. I mean, we lived it and we still can't believe it.
Sure.
But we've lived it. So let me tell you some of the things that have happened to me as I recollect. Well, as I mentioned, my son went into the Marine Corps in 97, and of course, he would have gotten out a few years ago, retired, and that was his intention, to be a lifer. But during the time, just before my son, in fact, days before my son found out that he received his top security clearance, I was living in Georgia at the time, and my next door neighbor called me on the phone and said, Susan, look out your window. There's a black SUV taking pictures of your home and your cars. And so I went to the window, and I saw a black SUV with the arm of a man sticking out, taking pictures with, a camera, because back then we didn't have cell phones with, cameras.
Yeah.
So I ran down my driveway, came out the other door, ran down my driveway. At this time, the man was in my driveway taking pictures of my license plate, my car, and the entrances of my house. And so I ran down the driveway and, I'm like, who are you, asking questions? And he sped off. And so I thought, well, this is really crazy. And I didn't know how to place this. And I thought, especially in Georgia, everybody's so friendly. They're all waving, strangers waving. So didn't fit in, right? And somebody said, when I told the story, maybe it was a real estate agent. Sorry, people, but real estate agents are a dime a dozen. They're all competing for your business. They have big signs on their cars. They keep the windows rolled down. and they'll come up to you and, you know, buy you a drink just to sit and talk to them to get their business. So, yeah. No, it wasn't a real estate agent. So, anyhow, a couple days later, my son calls and says, Mama, I have big news. And at the time, he was in Quantico, Virginia. And he says, I received my top secret security clearance. And so, you know, those conversations that you and I would talk about that we don't think that are anything big. Well, we can't even talk like that on the phone or I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, now it's something big.
Right. So I said, oh, my gosh, I didn't tell my son about the vehicle that had been monitoring my house, taking pictures, because I didn't want him to worry, you know. So, sure. But after I got off the phone with him, I said, oh, my gosh, I bet you this is tied into that. Right. So I'm the insurance policy. That's the way I took it. So anyhow, you know, my son, a couple of years later, after he went on his missions and he comes back to the States, he was living and working in Tampa, Florida. And yeah, there was some nefarious activities going on with this one general that he worked for in J5, Strategic Plans and Policies. And he told me a couple things, and he didn't like what was going on, so he transferred from J5 to J2. He actually put this guy on notice and called him out, and you know, had him sign off on his transfer papers. And this general forced my son to fly to Africa, then Iraq, to hand deliver his uniforms to him. And my son reminded him this was an abuse of taxpayer money. And he said, I don't care. You're going to do it.
Yeah, it's your job. Bring me my suits.
Exactly.
What is that? Like,
well,
that's this slightly
guy had
narcissistic.
Well, this guy had a reputation with everybody. He wasn't liked. You know, nobody liked this psychopathic general. And they all had his number. But nevertheless, this is one of George W. Bush's generals, okay?
Yeah.
So anyhow, and this guy was on CNN all the time and covering the Iraq war. He was very big over in Iraq. There's a story that goes with that, but some stuff I'm saving for my book too. So I will tell you that this guy, my son called him out. Nobody's ever called him out. And so, this guy ended up working in the State Department the year before my son was killed under the communist Madeleine Albright. So it just tells you that birds of a feather flock together, and you can see it with, you know, certain types of people who they work for. They bring in people that are yes people that are going to forward the agenda.
Yeah,
but I've heard it from so many people that worked at CENTCOM with this guy, even another general that I met at the Pentagon years ago when I had a briefing with generals about my son. This guy found out I was there, and he said, I have a few stories of my own, and I want to tell you, your son took the brunt of abuse. So, nevertheless, this general, oh, yeah, and I wanted to mention that my son was the personal attendee for former President George W. Bush at the Republican National Convention in 2004. So he was a very good looking man, and he had his brains, and he was athletically fit, and he had it going on, and they knew it, and they wanted my son to become an officer, and they wanted to sign off on his paperwork, and he said, no way. He was Marine of the Year twice. I was at his Busch Garden, Tampa, Florida ceremony when General Abizay came up to me. and others, and they said, you know, we want Aaron to go to officer school. And I said, well, you have to ask him, you know, not me. But my son knew he would be misused, doing things he didn't want to do, because he had been approached while working for that general, the other general. And needless to say, he leaves CENTCOM August 1st of 2007 to go to Japan, 3rd Marine Assault Division. And that was a less high profile, because he was very high profile for 3 years at CENTCOM. And anyhow, 2 years later, gets deployed over to Afghanistan, where he was supposed to be for 9 months till May of 2010, but was only over there for 2 months and a couple days when they were set up and killed. And we have proof, it's in the investigation report, that somebody from the State Department was there the day before in the village of Ganjgal, meeting with the elders, and they asked the elders, how much money do you want and need to build your mosques and your sewer systems? Are you kidding me? Is that a coincidence? Well, let me backtrack here. So the day before my son was sent into the Valley of Death, he and his three other members, Dakota Meyer and a couple of the other men, they were at their outpost Camp Monte, and they were attacked. And the Taliban attacked them, or it could have been contractors. You know, we don't know. The bad guys, domestic and foreign terrorists, attacked them, and there were explosives dropped. My son was in the hooch with the Afghan soldiers, you know, talking with them. And Dakota was firing, Lieutenant Johnson was firing, and we had Doc, the corpsman, Layton, was with my son in the hooch. And, oh my gosh, my son escaped death just by inches because one of the explosives landed on one of the Afghan soldiers. This was Labor Day weekend, 2009, in the United States. It was Ramadan over there in the Middle East. My son called me that evening and told me, no, actually, I'm sorry, it was a quarter after 11 in the morning over our holiday weekend, and told me, Mama, I'm okay. I wanted you to know. I'm getting ready to go into a mission, and I'll call you, but we're going to need your prayers. And he called to tell us he loved us, and please pray for the Afghan soldier that was killed. And I could tell there was something. My son wasn't afraid of anything, but in his voice, you could just hear. A mother knows, you know, a parent knows, a mother and a father, you know your children. And my son actually called me again at quarter after five at night to tell me again that he loved me. And we talked for about 5 minutes on the phone, and then he had to go. And that was the last time I spoke to my son. And I was actually living in the townhouse of he and a friend of that he had. And I was paying the rent, living in the townhouse, and he had some personal effects there, including an important computer, which he told me to put aside and don't keep it in the house, put it away somewhere, which I said I would. And I was actually getting ready to move out of this house over that weekend. I had moved a lot of stuff out previously the month before. And that weekend when he called me, I was actually loading up my car, making two trips to my storage unit and where I had the computer, you know, as well. So the second time after I came back from the storage unit, and I had dinner, and I got home. It was about 6:45 at night on Memorial Day, that Monday. I noticed that I'm in my driveway, and I use the clicker on my car to open up the garage. And I'm a security buff, so I lock all doors, windows, even if I go to the grocery store for 15 minutes. It's just in my nature to lock everything up. And when I opened the garage door to see that my door from the garage to the house was ajar, I knew something was up. So I left my vehicle in the driveway, and I apprehensively walked around the door. And I could see that a crowbar was used to get in to the house because it had the indentations. I come from a family of builders and contractors, so I know what tools are and things around the house, and drywall and crowbars and tools are no surprise to me. And so I was afraid I was going to get the heck out of Dodge. So I got back in my vehicle and I pulled the garage door, clicked it shut. And, we had the drop box was on the front door because the house was going to be sold. And so nobody could have broken in. There were no windows on the garage. It was a townhome attached to other homes. So whoever got into the garage had to do so with the universal clicker, garage door opener. Sure. That's the only way they could have gotten in. So I knew I was being followed and something weird was up. Okay. I was scared. I made a phone call to a friend that owned the house, and along with my son, and I told them what was going on. They said, just get out of there. We'll send my dad over to check on stuff. Don't even file a police report. You know, you don't want to leave forwarding addresses. So I got out of there, and I knew I had to come back the next day because I had put the trash out, because the next day was Tuesday after a holiday and the trash men were coming. And I had moved all my stuff out. And I went there at 11:30 in the morning and put the pails up by the garage, and I took off outside the garage, and I took off, and about 15-20 minutes later, two Marines happened to come there to confront me, but I wasn't there. So this means that between the time that the last time I talked to my son, and they're what, 12-14 hours ahead in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
So I forget exactly, but they're hours ahead of us, a half a day ahead, I guess. But so in between the time of the day before, my son calling me and me moving out and someone breaking in to my home looking for something, probably surprised that I had moved out, that my son was dead and I had these two Marines here to confront me. And so they saw my next door neighbor who knew where I worked. He had the address and my business card where I worked. And I did marketing for doctors. The Marines went to my place of employment, but I was a marketer. I hardly ever stayed in the office. I was always in a meeting or working out in the field. And I received a call from the doctors and asking, oh, are you going to that meeting tonight? And I said, yeah, at 5:00 part of my job was I was an ambassador with the Chamber of Commerce. And that's how I did. I was a businesswoman, you know, bringing in business for doctors. And they couldn't tell me over the phone what was going on. So the two Marines went to the place of business where I was going to be. And of every place in the universe, it was a funeral home that was becoming a new member. And so there were 85 of my chamber friends that I did business with that referred people to my doctors. So I had to go. It was business. I pull up and I see two Marines outside And I was in shock, and I felt like a kick to my stomach, because I knew I was the only, out of the 85 chamber members, I was the only one that had a son that was a Marine. And here's two Marines at the front door, standing at attention. So at that same moment, I received a call from my doctor friend, and she said, pull in the parking lot. I will be there in a minute. I put my business off tonight so I could attend this event too. But really, she was there to console me. And the two of my friends were there, each get on each side of me as I get out of my car, and had me by the arm. And I knew what was getting ready to go down. And I'll tell you, around the corner walks the two Marines, and they looked at me and called my name, and I screamed, no! And my voice echoed down the street, and the sound that came out of me was like that of a wounded animal. I couldn't believe all these 12 years of my son's service that he tried to prepare me for. Mama, if it happens, you'll know I'm with God. You can never, never get over it. Never.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is, I knew that it wasn't just war alone. I know it wasn't just self-defense. I felt it. I felt something bad. I was angered inside. Because I come from a family of service. I'm a veteran.
Yeah.
We know when we sign up, we know the consequences, and we're the first to throw ourselves up on the altar over and over again. We teach our children all these things. But you never expect that being the best of the best of the best, that somebody from within, domestic terrorists, are going to aid and abet the foreign terrorists and hurt your sons and daughters that pay forward the freedom of every American. And I'm here to tell you, it's real. It's as real as it gets. Because before someone broke into my home, through the years that my son worked at Central Command with the elite of the elite that ran the Afghan war and the Iraqi war, I had various things going on with me besides my house being broken into. Before that, I had stuff going on with my vehicle. I was the victim of a drive-by shooting the year before my son was killed. I had to actually, when that happened, which was just insane, and I couldn't believe where it was coming from. But my son, years later, after I pieced things together, I know that my son had written a couple letters, and one went to the inspector general in regards to the general he worked for at CENTCOM. And who was the inspector general? None other than your Uncle Joe Biden Jr. And so this guy, you know, he's a criminal, and he's tied in with all these others. And he was a family friend with this particular general that worked with the commie, Madeleine Albright. So, yeah, they're all commies. They're all deep state. And so I had a series of events that took place while I lived in this townhouse. And that was just the beginning. Before my son was killed, things happened to me I couldn't explain, but finally I could put a face to them. And it was the face of an American terrorist that was working within our own military, involved politically, along with these others, deep state, who we know today.
Yeah.
But back then we didn't know what we know now. We didn't. We trusted. We trusted in George W. Bush.
Well, and this is something that I say on the show all the time. Believe me, folks, I believe in my country with my heart and my soul. I believe in our country, our people,
what America stands for, what it means. But there are nefarious actors within. There are people that are in these positions of power that do these things. And I was going to ask you, Susan, do you think, especially being tied to people like Michael Hastings, as your son was, investigative reporter who was getting ready to put out this huge report on General Petraeus and mysteriously died in a car explosion while driving pretty slowly down the road.
Right.
And
well, you know,
do you think that your son giving you this computer, do you think he was possibly trying to go whistleblower?
Yeah, I do. And looking back, I mean, how do we know then? You know, we didn't. We're like, oh, we're going to serve our country. You know, you're going to go here. And,
yeah,
you know, you're just meandering through life like, you know, it's an ordinary thing, but it's not. God uses ordinary people to perform extraordinary duties. And in this case, that's what happened. And then you have the nefarious within that they don't care if they use your son or daughter in arms as a pawn. They don't care. They're from an agenda that they're generational ring knockers and lobbyists.
Yeah.
And it is their duty. They are the 1% too. But they're the less than 1% of what's wrong with the world of globalists and crime and the haters. And they're the traffickers, the sex and children traffickers, arms and gun runners. That's who they are. We, people like us, are the less than 1%ers, generational, that fight against them. So, you know, it's a physical, mental, emotional, but it's a spiritual warfare. And it's us against them. And now, let me tell you, Gold Star families are not holding back. We're ready. Bring it on, because we're coming for you. We know who you are. We're calling you out. That's number one when you go to war. Call the enemy out by name. And that's what we're doing. And we're not taking it anymore, because our legacy, look at, before President Trump took office, number 44 had us hanging on the fringe of the cliff. And then old Hillary thought she was going to come and kick us over the edge. That didn't happen. And through my son's death, I've seen it all. It's like the Lord brought me there to see what was going on. I've solved a couple crimes, actually, through this in my investigations. And I've seen a lot of stuff. My reportings have been on Judge Jeanine's show and others. I haven't, but my work has made it out into the ethers.
The links that you sent me in preparation for this show were vast and many. Like I told you yesterday in personal message, I was like, I would love to talk with you today. I need a day to ingest all of this. There was and that was before you sent me the links that you sent me today, before we did the show, these audio clips, everything else. And as well as, the great AR-516 report, the investigation into the operations into the Ganjgal Valley, which we'll be getting into here in just a minute. We've got about 10 minutes left with our audience with WMLD in the Hudson Valley. Let's kind of nutshell what we've talked about so far before we start actively getting into the incursion that led to your son's death and the whole trail of things behind that. I mean, it's more than a trail of breadcrumbs. It's like somebody took a loaf of bread and just threw it all over the ground. It's everywhere, right, folks. And that's what we're going to get into with this declassified document that is available on dudesandbeer.com/knowledge/declassified. It is the top document there. And I'm just going to title it Ganjgal Valley Report. So it's nice and easy to find because, of course, all these things always have government designations. But if you can kind of nutshell what this experience has been like for you and what your mission and charge is now, and what you're getting prepared to do.
Well, It's I still can't believe that this happened to my son, that these things happened to me. More things have happened. I mean, you know, before we had cybersecurity, which is another thing in and of itself, we had more fox guarding the hen house. But I experienced that and other attacks. After my son died and I read the investigation report, which is really 500 pages, guys, by the way, there's a part A and B, one by the Army and one by the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And actually, I provided it to Congressman Duncan Hunter because the DOD was trying to tell them he wouldn't have it for 3 to 5 years. So I moved that along. I can't tell everything I'm getting ready to do, but I can tell you I'm working on my book, which will be out in 2020. And since President Trump took office, I haven't noticed that I've been followed by the Alphabet Soup Group like I was for a decade of my life.
I like that analogy. That's great. The Alphabet Soup Group.
But I will tell you that going into the new 2020, I think a lot more people are going to wake up from whistleblowers and truth dragon slayers and truth seekers like myself, because we are the news. People like you and I and others in this profession that do write articles and do radio, we tell it like it is. And sometimes the truth is hard to take. And I actually spoke on President Trump's stage 3 years ago before he became president. And I'm actively involved here in Tampa, Florida, with getting him reelected. And because we have to. He's the best person for the job. And I'm doing everything I can, working with other Gold Star families, some from SEAL Team 6 and other egregious tragedies, that we're all coming together now, and we're going to wrap this show up, because people need to be held accountable, and they will be. And it's not just sending our people, our sons and daughters over to fight with under false narratives. This is the domestic terrorists trying to take the best of the best, get them out of the country, so that they could perform their coups on us, on the American people. And it's not going to happen anymore, because we're done. We're done with that. So I'm involved with a lot of those things, and it my mind never shuts off, and I just keep rolling. And it's a lot of work to be done before we really do have peace. And one day I hope that I can not think about this stuff anymore the way that it's taken over my life for 10 years.
Like I told you before the show, like I've said so many times with our guest, Mike Turber, once you've learned to literally see it happening in front of your face, once this has been decoded and the mask has been taken off, you see it all the time.
You cannot unsee
it. And, you know, much like you're saying, I can't sit still. I can't sit still and just let that happen and not at least try to wake the people around me up to it.
Messengers.
Whether you choose to accept the message or not doesn't mean I'm going to stop telling people the message. one doesn't have anything to do with the other.
Chris, I have to tell you, when I received, a few months after my son died, and I received the 15-6, the 500 pages, and a lot of them were redacted.
Yeah.
And I read that my son called for help for nearly 2 hours for air and artillery support.
Yeah.
That the officers in charge of the Tactical Operation Command, excuse me, the air condition, TOC.
Yeah.
Had turned down the radio frequency so they couldn't hear Marines calling for air and artillery support. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
These are domestic terrorists. These men, two of them had reprimands put into their files only 6 months later to have them taken out again out of their files. They were promoted and they're living on big pensions as officer ring knockers that got away with the blood of four Marines on their hands. And God knows how many others these yes men got away with crimes. These are the perpetrators that we need to go after and hold accountable.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just the most egregious tragedies. And when we heard the families of the fallen heard what that these papers came out and we started to read them, we cried. Actually, it was a cry of relief as well as grief, because I cry every day. And I do. My soul, I carry the heaviness, the deepest sorrow deep within.
Just,
you know.
Absolutely. And my heart cries out to all of the families that were involved with this. Right here, at the just to give our closing audience here a little teaser and why they need to go to the website and hear the rest of this episode. The very final section of the first page of this declassified document, section B of or part B of section 2, execution during mission or execution during mission execution on 8 September 2009, the actions of key leaders at the battalion level were inadequate and ineffective, contributing directly to the loss of life which ensued. From 0530 first report of contact until 0810.
Actually, the first it's report
of
that.
And that was the first report of a mass casualty event, which meant we have more than one person dead right now.
Right.
That was and that's 2.5 hours of hardcore firefight, folks. This was no skirmish. The part up above that explains how they were talking about, you know, possible peppering fire, you know, like no fire support participated. You know, they were, the assessment was for light harassing fire upon withdrawal by up to 10 people. So that's what they expected when going in to get this intelligence on a key leader in the Ganjigo Valley. That's what they were going in there for, supposedly.
And
ended up walking into a straight up ambush. There's right. No way that 10 people would have enough ammunition with them to maintain a 2.5 hour firefight.
And Chris, the day before, someone from the State Department, like I said, was sent in there. And then, is it a coincidence? Let me paint this picture. Is it a coincidence that someone broke into my home? There was a firefight and an explosive fight, killing an Afghan, almost killing my son the day before. They didn't take them out. So then someone from headquarters at Camp Joyce called the Camp Monte, my son and his Marine team. You have to report at 3:30 in the morning to Camp Joyce. We're getting ready to go to Ganjigal. And, oh, by the way, Ganjigal, the Russians were at war there for 10 years. The mothers are the ones that got their son out of a 10-year war. So this was common knowledge among generals, strategic plans and policies in the making.
Yeah.
Someone with that knowledge set them up in that Horseshoe Valley. And then when my son was with his Marines and waiting almost 2 hours for the planes to arrive, the choppers to pick them up, a call comes in from another ring knocker saying, clear the airfield, leaving my son and his Marines in the Horseshoe Valley.
Yeah.
Now, this is treason, sedition. This is tyranny. That's what this is. And well, we're calling it out.
On that concept, real quick, I want to play another quick audio clip from, honestly, one of my heroes over the last decade. We have a clip here from Michael Hastings, The reporter for BuzzFeed, of course, as I mentioned earlier, the one who died in a tragic car explosion. A malfunction of his vehicle caused it to massively explode like there were explosives in it as he calmly drove down the road. Let's check out what he had to say about General Petraeus as he was giving up his title in the CIA and his involvement in Afghanistan before we really start cracking the nut of this case of the Ganjgul ambush.
Michael Hastings, in your BuzzFeed article, The Sins of General David Petraeus, mm-hmm. you argue that Petraeus was a master of deception. Do you think he should have resigned?
I mean, I think there's many other reasons Petraeus should have resigned besides who he's sleeping with that's not his wife. But I just want to make a point here. That the larger point that I've been making is that essentially the media has played a role in protecting David Petraeus and promoting David Petraeus and mythologizing David Petraeus. And we saw it here tonight. General Kimmett, who was a spokesperson in Baghdad, who was a roommate of Petraeus, who was involved in one of the biggest debacles in recent foreign policy history, is on TV, you know, defending David Petraeus without actually addressing the real problems with David Petraeus' record. And those are the fact that he manipulated the White House into escalating into Afghanistan. He ran a campaign in Iraq that was brutally savage, included arming the worst of the worst, Shiite death squads, Sunni militiamen. And then you go back to the training of the Iraqi army program that also had similar problems. So for me, all the while he's going around the country talking about honor and integrity. So for me, the questions of honor and integrity, I was raising those earlier. A number of other journalists who were actually covering David Petraeus were raising those concerns. You might not get that from someone like Barbara Starr at CNN, who essentially is a spokesperson for the Pentagon in many ways.
And that, like I said, is from one of my favorite reporters ever. He was definitely deep stated out, folks. He was getting ready to. He had told his mother, I'm going black. I'm going off the radar. I am about to release a major report that is going to shake the foundations of what we know in this country as far as our military and our military incursions. And next thing you know, he's gone. And so is all of his data. And things like that. That's why I was asking earlier, Susan, if you thought if you thought your son, because he had connection with Michael Hastings, and he of course was involved with Kemet, the general that was being spoken about, that was friends with Petraeus, who was involved with these horrible debacles in Afghan.
Well, the one thing everybody has to know is, you know, the military industrial complex holds the patents on these devices that, like the thing that took out Michael Hastings' car, you know, whatever you want to call it, laser energy, whatever. They own the patents. These new cars all coming out. Listen, the government can stop you in your tracks. And yeah, these cars can do wonderful things, but you know, everything's weaponized. Let's just say that that's the key word here. So, yeah, well, you know, generals shouldn't be arms dealers either. You know? And that's it. That's the whole thing, is that we have deep state in the military. It's not just political. The military industrial complex has been running the show since World War II. And it all came from Operation Paperclip. These people had children, and their spawn had people, and they work in the media. They work in the CDC. You know, they're the ones injecting the vaccines. It's all population control. They want to take over and inherit the earth. But we know in the Bible it says the meek shall inherit the earth. So we know how the story ends. And like I said, ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And it's the less of 1% fighting the less of 1%. Game on. So
yeah,
that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, to that point, going into nefarious deeds, starting to really get into what brought about this mission in the Ganjgal Valley in Afghanistan. Like it says here in the document, it described a key leader engagement that would be going on the 8th. So basically, there was a key leader of the opposition that was supposed to be there, that they were supposed to go in and do something.
Well, that's the false narrative. That's the false narrative.
Absolutely. And what has gone on since then? What has the fallout from this been, Susan?
Okay, so we have two Medal of Honor recipients, and we have three dead Marines, a Navy corpsman, and an Army man, and wounded soldiers, and people that have awards. But our country has lost a lot of shining bright lights, and truth was trying to be covered up by darkness. And what we have now is the 1% of us fighting the 1%, trying to climb the mountain and wake up everybody so that they can see that this was a charade. You know, it was nothing but a cover up for these military, political, domestic terrorists that were doing business with the foreign terrorists. And they didn't care who they hurt. They used us as pawns. And believe me, I am an American patriot, and I'm proud that I serve. But like you said, you can't take back what you've seen. You can't unsee what you saw.
Yeah.
And
you can't unring the bell.
What you've learned. Right. And so I guess we're Paul Revere's all over again. There's a revolution. And oh, by the way, they're trying to take the guns from New Yorkers and Virginians. And as you know, this charade played out against our president with what was going on with impeachment. They were putting in all kinds of crazy stuff and bills to get that forwarded so that the left, who are desperate for other truths to come out and unravel their world, they're still at it. And, you know, I guess regular Americans are going to have to find out, because when you have these terrorists coming to the front door, then they're going to have to fight. And they'll know how it's been for people like us in our military world. They're going to need to know how to use their fight or flight instincts like we have.
Yeah. And let's get into just a few minutes here. Exactly the connections to the deep state that you have found through your investigation into this raid. You've mentioned a couple times specifically the general being an arms dealer, things like that. Where do you come by this information, and where does it lead you? Where do these facts point?
Well, for one thing, and Michael Hastings knew too.
Oh, absolutely.
That general calls him out and he says, well, I was a businessman. And, you know, Michael Hastings is like, yeah, you were arming the Sunnis, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, but you see who they're hanging out with and who they do business with. And one of the pictures, this particular general is with another general that's set up many servicemen that are sitting in Leavenworth to this day for innocent. You know, they didn't do anything. They were just a victim of circumstance. They were put in there as scapegoats. And these people are all tied in together. You know, this alleged, say, John Nicholson, who's a crony of Kemet. John Nicholson's uncle was President George W. Bush's best friend. And remember when all the missing documents, the veterans' records went missing, thousands and thousands of health records went missing?
Yeah.
That's Jim Nicholson. And who was also President George W. Bush's best buddy, and who was the ambassador to the Vatican Jim Nicholson. And who's his uncle or his nephew? The guy that set up innocent Marines and Army personnel. There's people still sitting in Leavenworth. John Hatley's still sitting in Leavenworth. And for what? He was in Iraq. He's not guilty for anything. He didn't kill any people over there. But you got John Nicholson and the cronies, the ring knockers. These are the family members of military industrial complex. They're all invested in political gains. And they're using our sons and daughters. And if they can't use them in the way they want to, they kill them or throw them in jail. So these are nefarious families. So how I stumbled upon it, I didn't. I kept going and finding the cookie crumbs that led me to something else. Just like General Lute, who was in charge, a permanent fixture of NATO. Then you wonder why President Trump wants to get rid of NATO, because he knows what's going on. Okay, so this Lute was Bush and number 44's war czar. 8 years he was a war czar, and he and his wife are the Bill and Hillary Clinton of the military. Okay, his wife Jane Hall Lute, who works for the United Nations, by the way, and she was best friends with Paula Broadwell, so there's the connection of, you know, getting Petraeus out and exposed that way as well. And Jane Hall Lute was actually number 44's shadow figure for Janet Napolitano, and we know what went on with that. Then she was appointed to cybersecurity. Well, let's take a look at cybersecurity.
Now, when you say shadow figure, do you mean her shadow government equivalent?
Yes.
Now, that's something that a lot of people have forgotten, is that in the wake of 9/11, there was a shadow government created.
Well, it went on before that.
Oh,
but
It was just publicly announced, like, hey, we're going to do this. And then you never heard anything about them, like, dismantling said shadow government. Like, you never really heard anything about, like, okay, we don't need the shadow government anymore, everybody. You know?
Oh, yeah, well, the fox guarded the hen house.
It just stayed. It just stayed.
Yeah, the fox guarded the hen house. Well, they're the people that killed JFK, and they're the people
Watch it now. You're going to get me cut off. FCC controls the internet.
Sorry. You know, sometimes, you know, the truth wags the dog, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, truth seekers, we're not afraid of people anymore. We just, because we're known and people know.
It just is.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's going to be even more. This year is a lot of pronunciation, more documents coming out, more lawsuits. It's the breakup of old establishments that thought that they were going to take us over. So getting back.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just about to say, getting back.
Yeah, Janet Napolitano, her real figure, she was just there, but the person that was doing the work was Jane Hall Lute, you know. But let's not forget what took place when they closed down the Walmarts and they instilled in the cameras. And, you know, look, people, we were getting ready for a coup, the Jade Helm. That, a lot of people don't even know about that. They were trying to bring our militarize the communities. Are you kidding me? We can't even afford bullets to support my son in the battleground.
Yeah.
And you're going to bring in the military in my hometown. I don't think so.
Well, and we were talking about that before show. It's something that we've talked about on this show numerous times. And that's the concept of impasse comitatus. The fact that you're not supposed to be encamping soldiers amongst the people to begin with.
Right.
Much less doing, like, drills on American soil. Exactly. And it's reported regularly right now. Like, I want to say it's the state of Illinois that's trying to sue the government for flying military drills over neighborhoods and stuff like that, like full-on combat drills. And it's like, dude, planes crash from that all the time. You were over at junior high school, man. You know?
Well, you still have deep state in the operations. We didn't get rid of all these people yet.
Yeah, right now they're literally, look it up, folks. Feel free to Google it. I'm going to add show notes to this right now in my little notebook while I'm taking notes that I mentioned blimps at 1:15. So if you look it up, though, there are U.S. surveillance blimps flying all over America right now, over U.S. soil. Basically the same thing as a drone, just in a stationary position, just grabbing up Wi-Fi signals, all kinds of stuff. And like we said in our episode last week with Dr. John Hall, there is no law preventing experimentation upon the public. This is what gives them the right to run military drills, things like that on American soil, in your neighborhood, on a regular basis. Whether or not Jade Helm had anything to do with Agenda 21, that kind of stuff, I don't know, but the fact that they were getting ready to start doing mass military drills across the country in major cities, that's kind of disturbing to me.
Exactly. And that's the point. I mean, who's to know for sure, but I can tell you that the general whose name was on the Jade Helm paperwork, his name is on my son's investigation report.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, you know, it's by no accident. These people are involved militarily as well as politically for an agenda that a lot of Americans, will we ever know everything in our time? I don't know. But it's all, a lot of stuff's coming out.
Yeah, and that's just it. It comes out in small trickles, like we've said so many times with Mike Turber from 5x5 News. It's the concept of soft disclosure, folks. It's the idea that they're going to, bit by bit, leak these things out. Like I said earlier, if you recall, and you can go find the footage, you know, just hop on YouTube and look up, you know, U.S. military protects poppy fields, and you'll see the reports.
Exactly.
Where it happened. Like, they put it straight out in front of your face while they're there.
Well, that's part of their agenda. And
that's just it. If you just throw it out there, it's like people go, oh, okay. Well, that must not be news because that was pretty well soft-pitched. When it becomes that's what was going on all the time, people are like, oh, yeah, but, like, they reported that years ago. You know, meh. And that's the concept of soft disclosure. It's the same thing that was done with ATIP, where they started releasing mass document dumps from the FBI, the CIA, Navy, all kinds of people about, like, look, hey, here's all of our UFO research. Here's all the stuff we were doing for decades. And then, lo and behold, Luis Elizondo comes out with footage from a Navy aircraft saying, like, look, yeah, this was 10 years ago. We were doing this for a decade. That's how these things come about being declassified.
And look at what they do in Hollywood. They make movies on all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what's crazy is people will be like, oh, that sounds like the plot of some horrible Hollywood movie. Yeah, you know why? Because they have people called consultants.
You know, it's just crazy. The more you get into something, the more you see. It's just never ending, never ending. And
it does quite become the burden of knowledge at some point.
It is. It is a burden.
And it can be rough. Like, I don't watch the news, to be honest with you. Like, I'll watch it whenever I'm out. But I consume news hourly.
Right.
Because I know if you're not consuming it hourly, you're catching bits and pieces. You're not catching things. It's called news for a reason, and it moves, folks. You can't just chase a headline. You have to actually read the meat.
I agree.
If you don't know to read two or three from these people, two or three from that one, and then two or three from abroad, and then filter your truth from that, You're going to get caught up in a partisan argument. You're going to get caught up in this machine that they want your mind caught up in. This is why the mission of Dudes and Beer in 2020 is to weaponize your mind.
Exactly.
They are weaponizing everything against us. We need to weaponize ourselves. We need to weaponize the way in which we view and process information, people. We need to be ready to actively decode this as it comes out to us, because believe me, it's there. There is a huge web of obfuscation going on the regs from all sides. And the only way you're going to get to the undistilled truth is to rifle through it, to go through it, and to form your own opinion. People forget that was the charge of the media. Whenever we were created back in the days of Edward R. Murrow, stuff like that, it was only to report facts and then let you make up your mind.
Yeah, people have to use their own discernment. And I'll tell you, Chris, I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I would have to defend myself from, you know, people within. I mean, I couldn't put together what was going on. It makes you think like you're crazy. And then after some time goes by and you see all the facts that present themselves, it's just so bizarre. It really is.
The truth really is stranger than fiction most of the time.
It is.
And it like we're saying, it comes out in trickles. The case of the ambush in the Gangel Valley, Into the Fire, is now available on the Dudes and Beer store, everybody. That is a firsthand account of the most extraordinary battle of the Afghan war by Soldier Dakota Meyer, about his contact there, what led up to it, everything. And to know that these soldiers are now coming out and telling their story, that they aren't going to let this go either. They will not. And like it says in the description, 21-year-old Marine Corporal Dakota Meyer disobeyed orders and attacked to rescue his comrades, told to stand down.
Oh, countless times. Chris, I wanted to mention, out of 100 to 150 supposed Taliban, we suspect there were many contractors in there. How many times do you think my son was shot out of the 100 and 150 so-called enemies?
Once.
One time, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a hit.
Yeah.
In the right cheekbone, which severed his spinal cord.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty precise hit for a random battlefield wound.
Yeah, it's not some guy in a robe and slippers climbing a mountaintop. That's, you know.
That doesn't sound like an insurgent fighting necessarily.
No. Exactly.
And those are brave words, folks, for this Army veteran, for this mother, this exemplary mother in the eyes of her country, to say that my son was killed by his country. Like, that's just mind, even as it pops out of my mouth, that's just mind numbing to think about. I cannot imagine how you have processed the last decade of your life.
I'm still processing it.
And fully understand the steel with which you operate to get this case exposed, to get this story exposed before it happens to more kids, before it happens to more children of parents. In the name of greed.
Well, thank you, Chris. And my son used to tell me, Mom, you're the iron fist in the velvet glove. And he called me General Moms because, well, and I don't know, maybe it was because my dad was a Marine And I grew up a Marine brat, and every few years you moved. And, you know, kids played outside and they got hurt and they got back up again and you kept rolling. We weren't soft. We didn't sit in front of a computer all day. Let me tell you, my father taught us how to fight mentally and physically, but not to pick a fight. But the thing is, the way we learn and earn our way in this life is intelligently. You earn respect. And when you fight intelligently, go in to win. And, you know, you never think that you're going to have to do it at the highest levels of our government, of being. But I will tell you, being from a family of a high moral compass, nothing ticks me off more to see people that are committing the crimes working in the highest levels of our government. That's my government. That's what I took an oath to protect and serve, my Constitution of the United States, the law of the land. I don't care if I'm in uniform anymore as a young woman. I'm older now, but I still took that oath. My soul took that oath. And I'm my son's voice in life and in death. He fought for me. I am his voice and the voice for many other Gold Star families that lost their voice. We all lost a part of ourselves, that our child, that it doesn't matter if they be 40 years old or 20 years old or however old. Those are our babies. We brought them into this life filled with love, the same love we have for our God and our country. We're not going to let you steal our legacy and get away with it. We have grandchildren. We're going to protect them. We're fierce, and we're not going to allow this anymore.
And that is absolutely beautifully said, Susan. I wish more citizens, more average people like myself who have never served but love their country would remember the fact that, yeah, this is your country. This is yours. It's not theirs. Doesn't belong to the politicians. Belongs to you. You have the responsibility. You actively have the power to do something about what is being done. Do it. Contact them. Join the politics of the other side to get them out of office. Do something. And I have a breath of fresh air, and you're probably about to reach through the phone and slap me. Like we met today, but I can tell it's going to happen. Hold on to your britches real quick. I actively love the fact that AOC and Ted Cruz got together and authored a bill. I love it. I love that they both came out and said, you know what? You need to get rid of all of us in 8 years. Every one of us. Every 8 years, you need to get rid of us. We need term limits. You need to put us in check. And the fact that, like, literally politically ultraviolet and infrared came together to form white was beautiful. Don't really agree with either one of them on a lot of things, but that was a beautiful moment in American politics. And that's what Dudes and Beer is about. That's what we're about, folks, is having those hard conversations, having these conversations that we're having right now that, yes, our government does horrible things on the regs regularly, not just this administration, the past administration and the one before that and the one 20 years before that. It's been happening since my great-grandparents' generation. So since the generation before the greatest generation, it's been happening. And we need to wake up. We need to take our power back. We need to remember that we are a republic. We are not a democracy. Democracy exactly. is a form of voting. Republic is a form of government. And that is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And that means whatever we say goes. And if you don't vote that way, get out.
Exactly.
We told you to vote this way. Why didn't you vote that way? Oh, I didn't want to. Good. Get out. Next. Like, just fire them. Get them out. They don't vote the way you tell them to vote. They should be out. That's their job. It's not their job to make any decision other than what you want them to make. That's how this game is supposed to be played. And we've lost track of that in our country. And I hate getting that vehement. That's about as mad as I get. But I'm passionate. Well, and it's the fact of, like, it just makes no sense to me. It makes no sense how we got to this point. And when a president on his way out says, be careful, folks, because we had to make this happen. This is what we had to do to put into place to win a war, but you need to stop it.
Right.
And that was Eisenhower. That was before Kennedy. And it's still going on. The same thing. Like we were saying earlier, it is industrial military complex. And when you want to talk about deep state folks, that's who it is. It's the people who make the technology to electronically harass people that are not in check, that get to use that technology on the public to see what it does. It's those programs, it's black budget programs, things like that, that utterly create all of this, all of it. The arms trade going on in Syria, everything. It's where it all comes from.
Oh yeah, they've you know, the deep state's taken over every compartment and department of our health and human services and our media. And just, well, look at the EPA. I have a dear friend of mine that's a whistleblower doctor that was with the EPA, and he wrote a famous book. He talks about there's probably 90% of the doctors working for these organizations that are putting out false information. He wouldn't do it. And he talks about in his book, Science for Sale,
yeah,
Dr. David Lewis. He's a friend of mine. And
wow.
Yeah.
I'd love to have him on the show, because that is something that we talk about on the show all the time.
I'll see what I can do.
Is the religion of science and the fact that, right, yeah, if it goes against what millions of dollars are being invested in, good right, luck getting it exposed.
Well, and see, and this is why people take everything. This is why we have to read different things. And we have to sometimes put on that channel that we don't watch to see what's going on here. Or we have to go and stop by at this rally to see what's up here so we can weigh.
Our
discretion.
I'm going to make a 2020 challenge to my listeners out there. And that is this, folks. For every 1 hour of consumption that you spend in your chosen form of media, your chosen side, what have you, go spend 30 minutes that week, just 30 minutes, reading and listening to stuff from the other side. Just to start your process of listening to more than just your own little sphere of influence. Because, yeah, all this stuff is algorithmically gathered for you folks through Google, through all that stuff. Whenever you go and look up a news article, it's going to give you similar articles to that. That even means right, the opinion. That even means the slant. It's going to keep giving you things in that vein, because that's what you want more often than not. That's what you're going to. So that's what it's algorithmically going to give you. So you have to force these algorithms onto your devices. You have to force it literally to show you the opposing opinion. And people don't realize that. People don't understand the fact that your technology is controlling your dialogue. Like 100%. It is filtering what you're being exposed to if you aren't actively looking for the other side.
And that's why it's called paid programming.
That's right. You know? That's right. And never forget, like we said last week with Dr. John Hall, if that programming is free, you are the program. You are the product that is being sold. You and your opinions, your thoughts, your thought forms, your zeitgeist, everything. And this is what they've come to realize. This is what they've come to realize is truly the golden nugget. This is where they get this intelligence that they act on for ambushes like what happened in the Gangil Valley. That's where they get this actionable information, is from things like this. They gather it all. They rake it from other sources of information and pull it together and go, oh, here's something actionable. Or they at least make it to where that information is actionable.
And Chris, I wanted to add, when my son died, that was September. By January, one of the head generals wanted to come to my home and with four of his entourage to explain to me. And he was a great Marine general, but some of the narrative is different from what we know it to be today. So I don't know if it was told to him that way or what, but when I invited him in, and it was a scheduled visit because he had to fly out to Buffalo, New York to meet with my family that evening. But I patted the couch and I said, sit right here, General. I want to look you in the eye while you're talking to me. And well, that's, you know, I shoot from the hip. And so, you know, the thing is, I sat with my poker face because there's some things I knew a little different from what I was told. And being the mother that reads a lot, all I do is read and write, read and write, read and write, as you do, because we are the news. And in order to get it out there, you have to check out facts and weigh stuff out and check it out and reread it and rewrite it. But, you know, it's just amazing that when I look and I see lessons learned on the internet, and I'm thinking, that's not what happened. Read Dakota Meyer's book, Into the Fire. He tells an accurate account of what went on that day. That's the front story. My book will be the back story. Because when a crime takes place, we don't go forward, you go backwards. Who was this person? What did they do? Dakota doesn't even know what my son did in his life before that, because Aaron was a lot older than Dakota. Dakota doesn't know his intelligence background because you don't talk about those things.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even carry on a regular conversation. Something I thought was harmless, my son would say, I can't talk about that, Mom. Yeah. You know, they give our guys lie detector tests. And if that would have come back and negatively, my son would have gotten in trouble. I don't know what kind of trouble, but that's a separate world.
Actionable trouble, like Leavenworth kind of trouble at a minimum.
Right. So, I mean, what we sometimes as a family perceive or a community thinks is harmless, you don't know. I mean, when you're the best of the best and you're in with the big guys, there's a lot of stuff goes on. There's a lot of shadow. Well, there's a lot of eclipsing going on. Let's say that.
Yeah. And, you know, like I was telling you pre-show, talking with Mike Turber previously on the show, when families are vetted, when this happens, the chances and likelihood of somebody else in the family picking up the mantle, like you're talking about these deep state families, these families that are involved in the industrial military complex, it's the exact same thing in the intelligence industry.
Exactly. It is.
And they're picked up, folks, because the family's already been vetted.
Right.
The reason why he was able to get a top secret clearance is because he comes from a huge military background. His family's already been vetted for most security issues, that kind of stuff. So just by that fact alone, it makes that process so much easier. Once you're vetted, it's much easier for things to pass on, for somebody to come in behind you that enters into the same field and they go, oh, hey, you know.
But Chris, let me say, I had no idea when I was just a mother. Now I'm the mother. But when I was just a mother before my son was killed, why he was putting people on notice, unbeknownst to me. And I would come home from work one day and get showered, put my sweatpants on, and think I'm going to just sit and watch a documentary or a program for an hour before I went to bed. And I see these two, you know, a sight on my wall. I'm like, what is going on here? You know, PSYOPs 101, these deep state have used on families like myself. It's unbelievable. And, you know, I'm like trying to figure out, and I'm like, I know what that is. You know, I don't know if they were trying to scare me or if it was a real deal, but I wasn't going to stick around to find out because I lived in a state of fight or flight for a decade of my life. And so I got down on all fours and I clicked the TV off, grabbed my purse, my keys, and my cell phone. I was out the door and into my car. And do you know, I kept a to-go bag for about 8 out of the 10 years in my vehicle.
Yeah.
That's a sad way to live. It's a sad way to live. When you,
I've got a go bag.
Yeah, well.
Mine's just in case, not because people are actively after me, though. I mean, like you say, and the fact that you had to live that way and that you lived in a state of fear and panic.
You know, and I had to call a friend on the phone when I got to the corner of my street, because when I pulled in my garage, I had that friend on the phone before I got out of the vehicle. I watched as I put the garage door down that nobody was coming underneath. I mean, you don't, it's not that you're paranoid. It's just that there are too many close calls with people following you. And I didn't even get into the Black Hawk helicopters. I've had so many things happen that it's like, wow, you know, you just, it's just so hard to imagine that. This one day, I had to live with a friend of mine who was a doctor and put my stuff in storage because too much stuff went on and they were worried about me. So one day I'm over having my car serviced at the dealer, and the neighbors on the street witnessed three Black Hawk. They said Black Hawk. I don't know what they were. Over the townhouse. And it looked like they were spraying or doing something. I don't know. I wasn't there. When I came home, the neighbors were like, where were you? We were worried because we know all the stuff that's been going on with you. And there were three Blackhawks over the house. Well, I started every night hearing Blackhawks around 11 o'clock at night going over the house for, this went on for months. Then one weekend, a friend of mine invited me over to her house on the other side of town, a couple hours away. I go for a girls' weekend. The next morning, I wake up to have coffee, and my friend says to me, do you hear what I hear? And I said, yes, you could hear choppers in the background. 5 minutes later, three of them went right in front of me, like teasing me, like, I know where you are and what you're doing. That's one incident. There were many, but I always had a witness with me. Another time, a friend and I were coming out of her house, and she lived across the street from the golf course. And she says, do you see what I see? There were two guys sitting on the shoulder of the golf course with fresh military haircuts, watching and listening to us. So I got in my car and they followed me. I ended up turning my car around and I followed them. They hauled butt down the street and I sped up, got their license plate number, called it in to a cop friend of mine. And he said, what the heck is the DOD doing chasing you? I said, they've been following me for years. Then I bought a new car years ago, and I actually got rid of it a couple of years after I had it, because every time I'd get into the car, the Pentagon went right across it. the Pentagon. That's bizarre.
Yeah. Now, okay. Of course, aside from the atrocity of the loss of your son and the other soldiers and the ambush in the Gangigal Valley, what has been the hardest part of all of this journey for you?
Is not being able to talk to my son, hear his voice, hear him call me mama. To have him be a part of our family's life. You know, my son was my best friend. I mean, he called me 5 times a week, even when he lived here. And he roomed with a buddy or two. He would call me and invite me to his parties and get-togethers and cookouts. And, you know, when you don't have your child in your life anymore, and he was my protector, he was always worried about me. And not to hear his voice and see him. And, you know, we just miss him, you know. That's the hardest part of the journey, is not having the presence of my son. The second hardest thing is knowing that my son died in the Horseshoe Valley of Ganj Gaul, where it was awareness by the biggest generals that was the Pakistan border and of the Taliban, that was a place where you could get into, but you weren't allowed to get out of, unless the people allowed you out of there. And knowing my son was denied air and artillery support. And then when the chopper was there, the ray of light to come and take them out, the kibosh was put on he and his Marine brothers, and they were slain by the abuse and weaponization of these military political elitists that have gotten away with criminality since the inception of our country. And they've only gained in power through the sophisticated technology and rules of engagement and their own rules and abuse of our Constitution. And not live, they don't live by the laws of the Constitution. They defy it. They bastardize it. That's the hardest part, is knowing my son was left for dead that day. That this was planned, that the State Department was involved. And we grieve heavy in my family and in all our Gold Star families, not mine alone. I'm not here to take any of this grief away from any Gold Star family. The things that are sons and daughters have seen. And that's not even mentioning what they've seen, but what they've smelled, what they've heard, what they've felt. You know, when Dakota Meyer brought the bodies back and got them ready so that they'd be shipped out, when you read the book and you read at the end, my son and Dakota and his little team of four, they had a dog named Annie. Annie was their pet. And because Dakota Meyer defied the orders of the bad, the domestic terrorists within, he was punished for that. And they shot Annie in the head. When he walked out of the hooch and took care of our sons and put everything together, he heard the shot and he heard his dog yelp. And they killed his dog and they threw Annie in the burn pit. You know, you can't take back what you've seen and heard. And there's just too much pain. We need to get this out there. We need accountability and justice. We will find peace. My family and I will have some measure of peace. But they can never bring my son back.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the worst part of it, is that as of right now, there is no justice.
There is none. It's just, it ran a crime spree the last administrations.
Yeah.
For the last, let's say, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama. You know, it didn't matter if you had Democrat or Republican. Nope. It ran a crime spree.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's it. This is the last curtain call for that.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I just have such a deep grief.
Absolutely. No, there is no need whatsoever to apologize ever for letting emotion be known.
It's been 10 years, and let me tell you guys, it gets worse each year. It's just...
Well...
It's hard because there's no justice, you know?
It's hard because the atrocity continues. It's hard because these mechanisms that were put into place that put your son into the Ganjgul Valley are continuing.
Right, exactly.
They've gone unanswered. Sure, there have been a few reporters, a few people like Michael Hastings who were trying to do the right thing, and we see what happens to them. There were a few people even in this time frame that we can call hero people like Edward Snowden, who let it be known what was happening, and look at what has happened to them. Their country has turned their back on them for being a whistleblower, for doing the right thing. And that's why I say just the circumstances laid out that you put down earlier, the fact that your son had been working in intelligence, the fact that your son brought a computer to you and said, hold on to this, that your house was broken into the same day as the ambush happened, and that you were finding out about your son's death hours after your house was broken into.
Right, exactly.
It all points to the same kind of situation. And it sounds like a bad Hollywood movie. You know why, folks? Because bad Hollywood movies are based off this stuff. That is where these situations come from. They come out of real life. All those situations that you see on SVU and stuff like that happened in some way, shape, or form. These things occurred. These things continue to occur. And I laud you not only for your courage to show your emotion and your deep-seated emotion for this situation, Susan, but for your strength and your fight, your continued soldiering effort despite service to expose this, to get it out to people, to let people know this actively happens. Our government targets people. Our government does this stuff, and they do it while we sleep. They do it under the guise of security. They do it under the guise of protection. And really, it's nothing more than a corporatocracy, a bunch of people that, like this good general, like Chris Stevens in Benghazi, straight up selling misery and trading on the good name of these soldiers.
Yeah, it's overwhelming because you just never ever think it's going to happen to you, and it does. Yeah. It hits the less than 1% who serve in uniform, and I can tell you, my son was worried. He didn't want my nephew going in. My nephew is just getting out of the Air Force after 8 years. But he sees the compartmentalized, politics, very much so.
Yeah.
And, he's actually going to be a state trooper when he gets out.
Good
and
for him.
Gets home any day now. But again, see, serving our country in another way and through, you know.
That's just it. It's like being a teacher. That desire to do something never changes. It never goes away. It only morphs into something different. Mine morphed into this show. It morphed into Talking Sound, my podcast about the AV industry, things like that. That's where my voice as a teacher has gone. I share these things because I have been exposed to these truths through my research and through major media, folks. It's just that if you're not scouring news on the hour, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss it. And it's out there. It's out there. That's why I share it on the Dudes and Beer group. That's why I share it in this show. That's why we have guests like Susan Price on. And we'll continue to have guests like Susan Price, Mike Turber, John Bowne, Dr. John Hall, people who are ringing the bell of truth and trying to shed a little bit of light in this darkness, and to weaponize our minds, to really hone that weapon that is our mind, so that it can be used for the right ends and not misused by the dialogue. Because if we don't use it, they'll gladly use it against us.
Oh, yeah, they're finding new ways to do that.
All the time. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on to share your harrowing story, as well as the beautiful story of your son and his service.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for his service and for your service as well. Tell everybody where they can go to find your work with America Out Loud, your work as a journalist, and your investigative work into the Ganjigal ambush.
Well, if you go to America Out Loud and click on bloggers, then you see my name, Susan Price, and I write weekly articles about everything, not just military. There's some military on there, and just about everything that's going on. And you can find me again, AmericaOutLoud.com. And then go to bloggers and Susan Price. I also do radio shows, and my articles publish every Thursday. So this week I'll publish. Usually by Thursday evening they're published. And I also wrote a couple articles, but that one where we do in business with